productivity is ultimately about making space for what matters. And if you think about where all the best ideas you've ever had come from, they probably didn't come when you were sat at your desk doing emails. Because a big part of my work is about creating, writing, you know, books, courses, all this sort of stuff. A couple of times a year, I write in my NOSB, my to-do list manager, your job is to go for a walk in the woods. And, you know, seeing it in that way that, like, actually what's going to help me generate ideas and solve problems and recognize the thing that's stuck in my business, that's going to unhook and reveal itself, like, when I go for a walk in the woods and when I'm consciously not putting my attention onto emails and social media and, like, all that frenetic stuff. That's one of those things that I'm always working on is, you know, trying to use that space in the way that leads to the bigger inspirations.
Welcome to the Happy Entrepreneur Podcast. This is a podcast for people who look at business differently. It's for founders, freelancers, change makers, and freedom seekers who want to make money, do good, and be happy. We choose the path of the happy entrepreneur not to get rich, but to express ourselves and serve others in the most authentic way we can. Many of us couldn't find our role by working for others, and so we chose to work for ourselves. We took the more uncertain path, not because we wanted to, but because we needed to. We value learning, play, and friendship, and we have a need to make a meaningful impact in the world. By following the path of the happy entrepreneur, we learn as much about ourselves as we do about business. On this podcast, I have conversations with other happy entrepreneurs from different walks of life, industries, and countries. We talk about the journey and about what we learn about ourselves along the way. For us, entrepreneurship isn't just a way to make money, but a journey of self-discovery and growth. If you're on the same path and are looking for inspiration and connection, then this podcast is for you. If you've written down 7 top priorities, you've probably got no priorities, which means you're going to find it really hard to be productive. That's what Graham Alcott says, founder of Think Productive and author of Productivity Ninja. To him, productivity is ultimately about making space for what matters. This means creating clear intentions and focusing your attention on what you need to do. During this episode, Graham shares the different things that can affect our productivity and what we can do about it. This conversation is also within the context of a global pandemic and only just starting to come out of a lockdown in the UK. Whilst we may have had all the best intentions of using our lockdown time more productively, Graham also reminds us that we're only human. The challenging emotions caused by the uncertainty we're facing means we can't be as productive as we'd like, and that's okay. There are some wonderful nuggets of wisdom in this episode, as well as pointers to some really useful materials to help you with productivity, such as Graham's weekly checklist and the Think Productive's Working From Home pack of resources. Check the show notes for the links, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you are, whether you are watching this live today on Crowdcast, thank you very much and welcome today. Or if you're listening to this on the podcast, I hope you're in a different place to where we are now in this chaos that we're finding ourselves in. Today we are joined by our good friend Graham Alcott. Hi, Graham.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Oh, awesome. And of course, as always, my sidekick, I'm going to call you today, Lawrence.
Your business other half. Thank you.
As with all of these calls, it would be nice to have a bit of a check-in to start off with and then just say how you're feeling and how your day has been so far. Graham, how about you?
Well, this morning I pressed send on a book I've been working on, so
another one.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, yes, another one, but also it's one that's been hanging around for a while. So I've been writing this book with one of my colleagues, Hayley Watts. It's called How to Fix Meetings. And of course, when the pandemic hit, my publishers came back after the second draft saying, hey, can we put loads of stuff in about Zoom and whatever? Which isn't really the point of the book. Is all about how meetings are one of the last spaces for people to share attention. And I fundamentally believe that that is better done face to face. So I kind of fought them a bit on that. But anyway, after spending far too long on a book, it's back with my editor, and feeling free and relieved and happy about it. So yeah, and a bit tired too, but that's where I am.
Oh, I love the idea of feeling free and relieved. How about you, Lawrence?
I'm good. A bit muggy. It's a bit muggy in Brighton today. Actually, we talked about the sea mist has just rolled in off the sea after a scorching day or night last night. But yeah, I had a busy morning. I gave a talk to an Indian tech startup conference this morning, which was interesting, in between an oil baron and a VC. So definitely counterculture, let's say. Talking about making happiness your business model. But no, it's good.
I bet you had the best slides.
Oh, they were really sexy.
By far.
Like out of those three, right?
It does remind me of when we were in India, in Chennai.
Oh, God, that conference. Yeah.
What was the name of the conference?
It was CII, who were like the main, I don't know, like Chambers of Commerce of India, but like huge, big, you know, everything from big business to small business, a network. And it was their annual conference in Chennai. A friend of ours invited us along. And I think that's just fair to say, like, put us in it by giving us an hour to fill with like 500 suited businessmen at sort of wedding tables. And we were the least smart people there by a mile.
We did have Jack Hubbard do a rap.
Yeah, that was pretty cringy.
Imagine that. 500 people in suits waiting for someone to give them nuggets of wisdom on how to do startup, and what you get is a wrap. But that's the way we roll. Similar to you, Lawrence, I am feeling very muggy. The heat is, I'm really not enjoying this heat when it comes to sleeping, and especially when you have one of those tempura type mattresses, just soaks up the heat. Like, I just wanted to have some kind of ice bath going on instead of that, but. So feeling a little bit tired. It would be lovely to hear how everyone else is feeling. So please type into the chat whether you're feeling energized, excited, tired, muggy. And also, it'd be, if you want to, if you feel like if you're happy to that, it's a good place to connect with other people who, for us, everything that we do is about creating shared spaces, ultimately creating safe spaces to connect with like-minded people. So if you'd like to share maybe your Twitter profile, LinkedIn profile, Instagram, but so people can get a feel for who else is watching, feel free to do that as well. Today we're talking about productivity during a pandemic. And ironically, I think I've been feeling the least productive over the past 3 months than I ever have been. How has your experience been, Graham, over the past 3 months? You've just written a book, so on one hand, I hate you for being so productive, but how have your productivity levels been like?
I think maybe the good news is that even the productivity ninja has struggled during the pandemic. So like, I write books about this stuff, right? I think it's been really up and down. And I think what I've noticed a lot is people, you know, people sort of who follow me on Instagram and LinkedIn and places talking quite a lot about the guilt that they feel about not being productive at certain points, or feeling fearful about whether they're working on the right things. And I think so much about productivity always comes down to fear and guilt. They're very pervasive, you know, lizard brain emotions that we feel quite a lot. So, you know, for me, it's definitely been very up and down, like it has for lots of people. I was just thinking about this before. It's no coincidence that I've really felt the last 2 weeks have been my most productive for a good while, and they've coincided with, I think just a general sense, rightly or wrongly, politically, leave that to one side, in the country that kind of we're easing out of lockdown, that sense seems to be there. And also it's coincided with the 2 weeks where my little boy is at school basically full time, right? So, you know, I just think that's no coincidence, is it? And I think when, I mean, it's very easy to see the time suck and the time pressures around homeschooling or home facilitating some learning or home ignoring homeschooling, depending on what you're doing. But I think what's maybe less obvious to see is the, you know, just the mental load and stress that is caused by a period of huge uncertainty. And I think, you know, we've had to adapt and change a lot, just in everyday habits and behaviors. And again, I think it can be very easy to overlook the stressful effect that that has on the mind. And therefore, it's really understandable that there's just less of our attention, less of our emotion, less of our energy left to do really good, productive, interesting, clear work. I just think that's the truth, right? And I think for me, that's a really good place to start this conversation, because I feel like the alternative, which is to say, hey, I'm going to use the time in lockdown to learn the violin and, you know, read philosophy and, you know, all that stuff that people were particularly sort of spouting on Instagram in the first sort of 3 or 4 weeks of this thing, I think, again, gets us back into to guilt and feelings of inadequacy very quickly.
Mm. Yeah. There's the thing that resonated a lot for me there is this that feeling of uncertainty. And so you suddenly everything stopped. And so there's this thing, oh, well, maybe we don't need to do anything. But then if you couple that with uncertainty, all that nothingness just gets filled in with fear. It's like, oh, shit, what's going to happen next? Well, that's my assumption with maybe some people who are very used to being busy. How about you, Lawrence? What's your reflection on sort of like dealing with productivity over these past few months?
Yeah, like Graham, I think at first it felt like there'd be a lot of time, expanse of time, because we had some stuff to sort out beginning, like canceling our events. So there's lots of practical things we had to do, which actually made us more busy with kids at home, which felt quite stressful. And then thinking about what does work look like, business look like for the rest of the year, and whilst trying to navigate an online program of founders who are also going through the same transitions or questions. But then I kind of found peace with it, really. I think I've always liked the idea of working less but being more efficient with my time. And so in some ways, I even remember this when the kids were young, when I got a puppy a couple of years ago, which sounds strange, but having to look after something else or having less time to focus on work actually meant you have to be more, prioritize your work better. And actually, hopefully, I wouldn't say I've been more productive, but maybe been more effective in the time I have worked. And then accepting, like Graham said, that some things just slip and that's fine. And realized that actually, no, I'm not going to have more time because I've got two kids at home and my wife's working at home and we're bumping into each other around the house, and I've got to look after my mum around the corner and the neighbor. And so it's like, you can spend the whole day sort of helping everyone else, and then actually you've got like an hour to get some work done and you feel bad about it. So I think I probably had about 3 weeks of it and then realized, just stop. Like you said, lose the guilt, because we're all just trying to do our best, really.
Yeah. I'm just noticing Kim's comment in the chat there saying, lockdown is teaching me to slow down, which I'd say has increased my productivity paradoxically. Mm. And I think both this idea of slow and fast and the sort of the paradox there, and also just the paradox around time and productivity, I think are really useful things to mention. So generally, when you have constraint, when you have, let's say you know that you only have this 1 hour in the day to do stuff, it will focus the mind to really think about what's your biggest priority. You know, that 80-20 classic kind of productivity idea of the, 20% of what you do is what adds 80% of the value. And so you look for those 20%. I did an experiment a few years ago. I did this year of extreme productivity experiments. And one of them was called flipping the 9 to 5, where I worked 5 to 9. And I did it 5 to 9 a.m. for a couple of weeks, which is actually still how I've got this book done, actually, in the last couple of weeks. It's been a lot of 5 to 9s, but just working 4 hours a day. And what I really learned from that was I thought, you know, I'd written a book about productivity. I live and breathe it. I talk to clients about it all the time. But just changing my day from 9 to 5 to 5 to 9 suddenly just made me think, wow, like this stuff that I was allowing into my space and, you know, making space for that actually, you know, was a bit less relevant or a bit less useful. And when you've only got 4 hours, it really focuses you to do the most important work and the best work. So it's a weird thing, like constraint, as long as you've clarified it, can be a really useful tool for productivity. And you can kind of see it as a positive rather than a negative. But it's about that clarity. So it's about saying, this is the hour that I've got, or these are the 2 hours I've got, and putting boundaries around that, putting some deadlines and times around that, maybe hand over with your, you know, other half if you've got kids at home, that kind of thing. But just having a really strong boundary around that stuff and like, I'll work from here to here. Yeah, you'll be amazed at what you can do in 2, 3, 4 hours as opposed to having a full day.
You must get just quickly, as you were talking, when someone says productivity, you must get this all the time, that in my head there's an impression that I haven't been productive because I haven't put the hours in, like you said, versus if I look back at the last few months, I actually think in terms of the outcome of the work we've done has actually been very effective, but maybe not been hugely productive in terms of it's not been as many hours put into it, like you said. So do you get that, the whole idea of the language around it being difficult for some people?
Yeah, I think so. I think often internally within Think Productive, so we're going into companies and selling workshops on productivity, getting your inbox to zero, fixing your meetings, how to be a productivity ninja, this kind of stuff. And often the conversation that we're having with the person who books us is about productivity and that being linked to better returns, better profit, like outcomes for the business. And then the conversation we have in the room when we're running workshops is much more around managing your stress, working smarter, not harder, you know, getting a better balance with the work that you do. So it's kind of like this double-edged sword thing where actually when you give people that autonomy and ability to really look after their own minds and to make their own constraints, make their own rules, make their own schedules, all that sort of stuff, you tend to just find better outcomes. But of course, what that's kicking back against often, particularly in bigger companies, is just this whole presenteeism thing. You know, like you're seen as being successful and efficient if you're sat at your desk. And the ones who get noticed are the ones who send the email at 8 o'clock at night saying, hey, who wants to get pizza, guys? You know, and all that sort of stuff. And it's just nonsense. You know, I think there's a lot of talk about hustle and sort of hustle culture. The whole Gary Vee sort of cult is built around this idea of work your face off, work 100 hours a day and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, actually it's a really suboptimal way to work. Like you look at the science of it and the law of diminishing returns kicks in pretty quickly. If you're doing a knowledge work job, it's more like 30 hours than 40 hours. So if by sometime on a Thursday morning you're feeling really tired and fried, you're probably done, you know, mentally, emotionally, energetically for the week. And I think, you know, we really need to get back to a conversation around, Lawrence, as you were saying, you know, what's the outcome there? What's the sort of productive thing I want to bring to the world rather than like, have I, you know, put all of those hours into to make something happen?
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So the things that spring up for me when you're talking there, the last thing you think is real clear intention. What is it I'm trying to create, or what is the purpose of this work that I'm trying to do? And the other aspect there is focus. And I'm curious to hear from people. I'm going to put a little poll out to see who's working from home right now. So answer that. Because one of the challenges, whether you're working from home or not, and I think that I see also with a lot of people in our community, entrepreneurs and startups, is distraction and not being able to focus on a specific piece of work because, oh, there's this other thing, and there's this other thing, and there's this other thing, or why am I doing the right thing right now? So I hear from you this real need to be present with the work and to focus on it and how that means you become more effective. Is there anything that you've learned around actually then deciding that this is the right thing to be doing right now and to stop yourself drifting off to, oh, but there's that, and there's the social media, and there's the marketing, and there's this?
Yeah, loads. So let's think. I mean, one of the things that I learned very early on in my career was the Stephen Covey story about big rocks, which I think is just such a useful way to think about your work. So basically, if you think about if you've got big rocks and pebbles and sand and you've got to put it all in the jar, if you want to get everything in, you've got to start with the big rocks and then you fill the kind of smaller things in around it. And I still kind of think about that today, and particularly in my mind, it's like I choose one big rock for the morning and one big rock for the afternoon. And if I'm doing a long day, as I've done a few recently, where it's like I'm doing a kind of 5 to 9 shift and then I'm having an hour off and then I'm doing another morning shift and then an afternoon shift, I'll kind of think about it as being 2, maybe 3. I think if you've written down 7 top priorities, you have no priorities. Right. So you've got to get really clear about your choices. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing, which is particularly important in times like this, is around agility and coming back to those decisions that you've made regularly. And in many cases, it's about renegotiating your commitments with yourself. Right. So it's like I was going to do this thing. And then 3 weeks later, the world's changed. And another 3 weeks later, the world's changed again. So one of the things I do every week, and it's in the book, is this idea of the weekly review. So I have a checklist for it. If you want to find the checklist, if you just Google Think Productive weekly checklist, you'll be able to find a couple of examples there. But basically, the checklist is about walking me through what's on my plate, what work I'm doing, what my calendar looks like, looking at my projects list, which I think is one of the most underrated and most important pieces of productivity infrastructure, if you like. It's not the to-do list, but actually the projects list. Like, what's my list of the bigger outcomes I'm trying to get to? So I look through that, and I want to make sure I've got at least a good sense of what the next physical action is that I need to do on any of those projects, but also a really good sense of like how tactically that's going to play out over the week. And Leanne's saying there, yeah, similar to the GTD weekly review. That's really where I learned the whole idea of review is from David Allen, GTD. And I think that's like, it's one of those habits that's a really difficult one to make it stick. A lot of people start doing, there you go. Lawrence has just put it in the chat there. A lot of people start doing some kind of weekly checklist, weekly review process, and get 3 or 4 weeks into it and then kind of fall out of love with it or stop doing it. And for me, the power is like doing it consecutively, like doing it 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, weeks in a row. What you start to see is you just have a much greater sense of control over what you're doing. And also I think the more you do this stuff, the easier it gets to become ruthless in your thinking. And what I mean by that is, ruthless with screening things out that you don't want to do, ruthless with renegotiating. Even though I said to myself I was going to do this, and maybe I said to some other people I was going to do this, I'm actually going to change my mind on that because it's no longer worth me spending 4 hours of my time on. So it's those kind of conversations that we have to have regularly with ourselves. And often we don't have those conversations explicitly as part of a process. We have them in the shower or walking the dog or while we're making a cup of tea. And we half have the thought, but we never quite finish it. And I think having some kind of checklist to be able to focus on with that is a really good way of finishing that thinking. And in my head, there's a massive difference between doing 90% of that thinking and doing all of it is just like an infinite benefit, right? You've got to get to the end of that thinking in order for it to really have an impact.
It sounds like there's a discipline to this, to do this on a regular basis. And my immediate thought is then making yourself do that, and then while you're trying to do that review, thinking, oh my god, should I be doing something else? how's this gonna work?
Is this the right system?
Is this gonna help? Yeah, so this is really interesting in terms of like building up that muscle. I don't know what is. Did you find it quite easy for you to just slip into that and have that as a regular practice, or did you go through dips of doing it and then stopping and then yeah, just if someone was trying to struggle to even just have that simple discipline, what would your experience been?
Yeah, it reminds me of, because, you know, really what that's about is about getting to a sort of level of clarity that helps you to manage your own stress and manage your own uncertainty and everything. Because we're, you know, like part of the nature of work is that you're living with uncertainty all the time, right? And that's something that can be quite difficult to just put down on a Friday and have a weekend. And so being able to live with that sort of constant sense of uncertainty, particularly if you're an entrepreneur as well, right, where you're responsible not just for your uncertainty, but for everybody else's too. What really starts to happen is that once you are doing that regularly and you start to feel a bit more in control of that and you feel more comfortable with like where you're at with that stuff, it just has such an amazing kind of stress relieving benefit. Like, it's the time in my week where I feel most empowered, I feel most momentum. I feel really good about being able to put that down on a Thursday or Friday. My weeks tend to finish on a Thursday and then picking it back up again on a Monday. And so it's one of those where, like, slightly paradoxically, the more you do it, the more you understand the benefit of it and the more you prioritize it. But if you think about its kind of stress relieving benefits, then I suppose the way to think about it is it's a bit like that Buddhist saying, which is like, you should meditate for half an hour a day, except when you're busy, then you should meditate for an hour a day. And it's one of those where, yeah, when you really feel like up against it, and I do this too, like I have weeks where it's like, okay, I'll do the checklist next week. It's fine. And then suddenly 3 weeks have gone by and suddenly you start to feel, you know, just the fog comes in, or you just feel really uncertain about whether you're making the right choices and stuff. And it's like, oh yeah, sure enough, go back to doing that weekly process and you just instantly feel better at the end of it. So it's one of those that it's very easy to forget how useful it is. And yeah, a lot of our work is about helping people to make stick some of those really valuable sort of discipline habits. It's if there was a secret sauce or a kind of special potion you could drink that would make you do that stuff all the time, I would love it, and I would I would take that pill every day. B, I'd be a bit concerned because I'd sort of be out of a job, right? It's like it's kind of a lot of what we do is the fact that this is difficult and people do struggle with it. But yeah, I think it's very valuable.
The word habit sprang out for me very quickly, and it's that thing of the challenge we always have. Human nature's difficult to cultivate new habits, and I'm wondering as to whether doing it as a group can help, because I've always heard that, you know, when you're doing a new habit, whether it's the gym or anything new, having that, doing it as a group, as a collective, where you hold each other accountable to it, whether that's something that can help. I don't know if that's something that you've seen people try.
Yeah, I have. And also just in pairs, just like having a buddy, like a review buddy, right? And what's really interesting about that is there's something in our psychology to do with intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, where we're really happy to let ourselves down and not do it, but we don't want to let someone else down. So if we've got, you know, 11 until 1 is our have a coffee and review time with our buddy, we have to show up and be there, and we'll show up for that other person. And that forces us to then show up for ourselves. So I think groups, it's easier to sneak out of a group if there's 10 of you and suddenly there's 9 and no one notices. But if you've got one buddy and it's like you've got a time that really works well for the two of you to both do it every week, I think it's a really valuable way of doing it.
I think Kim just hit the nail on the head there. It's like productivity review buddy. She's in. So who wants to join Kim, or if you want to pair up with anyone else?
You offer out your and I think the other thing about it, just in terms of if you're literally going to do that right now and sort of pick someone out, I think it's really important to do, I think this is a big issue generally, not just with review, but it's really important to make space for quality thinking. So in my experience, doing a review first thing on the Monday morning when everyone else is emailing you isn't a great plan. Doing it when you're in the house with kids coming and tapping you on the shoulder isn't a great plan, right? And so, you know, back in the days of people working in offices, I would always say, if there's a day in your week where you're working from home and you're on your own and you have solitude, that's the day to do that review process. Or if that's not happening for you, can you go to the coffee shop around the corner? Can you just find a different space to be able to do that? So I think it's really important, as well as being in the habit of doing it regularly, is doing it regularly at a time where you have that space for quality thinking.
Mm. Now, I was wondering from you, Lawrence, your experience of doing this, because you know, knowing you, that you're governed a lot also by your energy. So, being compelled to do it at a certain time each week doesn't always work for you.
Yes and no. I think it's been different during lockdown as well. I think because we've had this program we're running, and so we've used Monday morning to catch up with Lana, who's one of the coaches on the program. So that's been really useful because we've had a momentum around that, I think, in terms of a check-in, a weekly check-in to see, you know, what did we learn last week? What can we tweak? What will we do differently this week? In terms of putting something in the diary each week, yeah, because I think everything's been in flux so much, I think I found it hard to find that flow as often as possible. And I think one of the few constants is actually this weekly webinar, really, which has been great because it's been a nice place to just have chats like this. And so I found that useful personally. But yeah, I think it's when I see a full diary, I just feel stressed. I think I'm sure lots of people. So whilst on the one hand, I like the idea of a rhythm and planning, when my diary starts to get really full, I start to get that anxiety feeling. And so whilst it's not all about me following my energy, I think there's something about, like Graham said, if you get to the point on a Thursday where you're done, then you're done and just walk away from the thing you're trying to do. And I've tried to follow that more in lockdown. And that was kind of where I was curious. Maybe we can tap onto this at some point and raise the conversations around the well-being side of this, because I think you highlighted this in your post that led to this call. And you wrote the book about nutrition, right? A couple of years ago, about how we can eat better to be more productive. And so I'm curious to know about, I know personally when I'm feeling a lack of energy, there's something that tells me I need to take some time out, and even if it's just 10 minutes, whatever, like you said, meditate, walk, whatever it might be, and then come back to it fresher with fresh eyes.
Yeah, for sure. I think food's a vital thing. So I was talking before about my extreme productivity experiments, doing flipping the 9 to 5. I did another one which was all about eating the optimum diet for productivity, so looking at foods that particularly fuel the brain. That led on to working with a nutritionist and doing a lot of reading around the science. As much as it is, there's still a lot that we don't know about how the brain works, but a lot of the science around different foods and also how we digest different foods. And that's all in a book called Work Fuel, which actually we're gonna re-release. It was a book that was, so there's loads of nutrition books, but there wasn't particularly a nutrition book that was about how to have energy and how to have energy in a busy working environment. So we thought, hey, this is like a huge, there's a huge gap in the market here. Is there a market in that gap? Turns out there wasn't really. So we're actually going to release it again as a more general book around having energy, and with a little bit less of a productivity slant. And so I don't know if that's yet up on Amazon, but it's due out in January, and it's going to be called How to Have the Energy. As simple as that.
Nice. Reminds me of
still get the Work Fuel one. That's still, if you want to get it now, you can get the.
I was just about to say, it reminds me of when you came to Altitude, you did a workshop, didn't you, about the sort of key concepts of the book. And then I think the next few weeks afterwards, everyone's sending you pictures of their food.
Which is kind of how it started for me, was coaching with Colette, the co-author of the book. And I would send her, pictures of my plates, and she would send it back. But one of the main messages that she kept instilling in me that became a main message in the book is the idea of eat the rainbow. So there's a whole range of different nutrients that you get from different colored foods. So having a salad where everything is green, yeah, it's good for you, but it's not actually optimal. So adding in the red tomatoes and the yellow peppers, and having different colors of things in there, beetroots and carrots and different things like that, will really help you to develop the energy around your work. And the other one that was really big for me, and this gets into a little bit kind of, certainly this was my personal experience rather than it being medical advice, but to look for foods that contain tryptophan. So a lot of nuts have tryptophan, avocado has tryptophan, but tryptophan is a very good, and turkey if you're a meat eater, and various other foods, but it's a really important amino acid that basically supports like your body's dealing with stress. So if you're dealing with a lot of stress, a lot of adrenaline and kind of adrenal function is really helped by eating certain foods. So it's, and that's just one example. There's hundreds of things that you can do around that that just turn kind of average meals into really optimal meals without the need to do paleo or, you know, sort of bullet coffees in the morning and all that sort of crazy extreme stuff. There's the good news is you don't need to be extreme with food. Mm-hmm. You just need to be consistent with it. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a thing. But I think there is a more general thing here about energy as well. And I think, you know, I mean, all the science is like in terms of exercise that you actually don't need to do that much to get a really big benefit. So just doing 10, 15 minutes, doing a little bit of Joe Wicks in the morning. I've been doing the Joe Wicks HIIT training long before it was cool. Right? But, you know, even just 15 minutes of that just wakes the brain up. And I really notice that if I'm having a lazy day where I've not done some exercise early on in the day, I really notice that my brain is not quite as engaged. And then the days where it's like, I did my 15 minute HIIT training early on, it's like, oh, who'd have thunk it? Again, it's actually worked. So often it's like doing the simple things really consistently and well can really help. Yeah.
Mm. Again, it comes back to that idea of trying to cultivate a habit that is sometimes hard to start. You know, trying to do some physical exercise in the morning, I know a lot of people really struggle with it, but over time, how that can really just, you feel the benefits. So a bit like the review and the morning exercise, how it takes time for that to really kick in.
Nice. Just seen Leon's put high tryptophan foods in the chat, which is very handy. and that's right. I'd forgotten that eggs are high in tryptophan. I have eggs pretty much every morning. And that was a big change that working with Colette brought about. I was never someone that was that bothered about breakfast. And again, it turns out particularly having protein early in the day really helps your metabolism, helps you get the best from the other foods that you're putting in.
I don't know about you guys, but I think food's been one of the few sort of highlights of lockdown. Being able to enjoy food more and have more time to cook and eat.
Yeah, there's a lot of people reporting. We eBay is one of our clients at Think Productive, and I remember having a conversation with someone at eBay a few years ago saying that everyone has the eBay half stone, which is basically like when you start working at eBay, you get so used to the fact that it's like free smoothies, free pastries, free food all day, like, you know, lunch carts coming around with all this amazing food. They just put on half a stone like really quickly.
Wow.
And I think a lot of people are sort of reporting the lockdown half a stone as well, right? Because you're just next to the fridge all the time.
Yeah. We can't say no.
Yeah, that's the distraction potentially. I think the majority of people saying, we answered the poll, they are working from home. And so there's that distraction of the kitchen, distraction of the kids if you have them, distraction of potentially living in the working in the place that you normally live, and then seeing that heap of dishes as you're tapping away at the computer, now that can be a challenge.
I don't know, I've read a lot about, and I've certainly struggled with it at the early part of lockdown, not sleeping as well, and that makes you more tired, and then you probably need more sugar and start to binge.
Yeah, I've had the worst sleeping habits over this past few months. I think the fact that I don't need to go anywhere, or I used to have a habit of at least going to the co-working space on a regular basis each week, but because you're at home, you don't need to get changed.
We don't want to know what you're wearing in your lower half. No one needs to see that.
Doing whole days just from bed. It's just like,
exactly. Just get there, just plug it aside. But it adds to this idea that, so like you're talking about the uncertainty, but also the potential absence of structure, unless you're really disciplined. I think that can be a big challenge for people. I just want to say, if you have any questions for Graham or anything that pops up, we've already got a question from Kim that we can address in a bit. But if you do have any other questions that pop up for you, no matter how silly you may think they are, they'll help us because it's always good filler. But at the same time, this is a great inspiration for the conversation. So please post any question in the Ask a Question feature here on Crowdcast. On that, maybe do you want to have a look at this first question from Kim to see what... So she says, what tips do you have for small business owners, social entrepreneurs who feel the demands of their clients but want to work sustainably for the business and personally?
Yeah, I mean, this maybe is one that I have some good practical experience with. So Think Productive, my company, for the last 8 years now, maybe even 9 years, has been working a four-day week. So we have, throughout that whole time, like clients have never, a lot of clients for the first few years we were doing it, it felt like a really daring thing that was not mainstream, in any way. So you didn't have like Jacinda Ardern coming out saying, hey guys, maybe the whole world should work a four-day week. Like, it wasn't a mainstream thing that was even on the horizon. So we felt very defensive about it in terms of not telling our story about it and wanted to keep that from clients. But we'd still get emails and phone calls on the Friday when everyone else is working Monday to Thursday. So it's like, how do you still stay present for clients? And the way we managed to make that work was basically everybody would work one Friday and four. So there was always one person whose job it is to just be that first port of contact, when that's needed. But it just allows everybody else to do a four-day week, and then everyone kind of takes turns on it. So that was kind of how we worked with that. And I think, if by sustainably in that question, part of that is about taking some downtime and setting some boundaries around when you're going to get back to people and when you're not. It's really worth thinking about as a team, how can you sort of play around with those schedules. We've kind of used, we have email inboxes that are called things like hello at Think Productive, clients at Think Productive. So generally you'll get the same person on it, but it makes it easier for us to then give that inbox to someone else to manage for a day, or, to sort of transfer the phone to someone else's mobile and that kind of thing. So just using the technology in that way, I think, is really helpful. I would also say that I think in the current climate that we're in, I think there's a general lessening of the expectation around that. And so, if you're still feeling that same pressure, maybe the good news is when you take a step back, there isn't actually the same expectation from clients that you need to be on 24/7, depending on what you're doing. If you're, Chris Whitty's PA doing the science advice or something, yeah, you probably need to be on 24/7. But actually in a lot of client work, and we've definitely noticed this, people are giving you more leeway in terms of not getting back to them within the hour or within the day or whatever your sort of standard procedures and practices are. So I think there's just, there is a bit of an acknowledgement that life and work are more blurred and more difficult and more in flux than perhaps they are in sort of normal life. So I think it's just worth taking that into account too. The other one that I think is a really nice little tip and trick is using your out of office or using your email signature to just give clients a really good indication of, these are my working days, or the out of office comes back saying, hey, I'm out now until Thursday, or whatever the thing is there. It's just kind of using that as the way to manage the boundary, or even just, hey, I'm taking the morning to work offline. I'm not going to be on email. I'll be back on email at noon or something, and setting that up as an out of office just for that 3-4 hours in the morning. So kind of using the technology a little bit to help you to set those clear boundaries. And as I said before, I think boundaries and constraints work really well, but only when you're clear. So again, it's like actually defining that rather than saying, oh, I wish people wouldn't call me in the morning, like actually setting it as, these are my times to be online, makes a difference. In the same way that, if you're dealing with staff, one of the things often when I'm coaching people, I'll often talk about is the idea of having surgery hours for your team, right? So it's like, I'm going to do my work in the morning, and then 2 till 4, those are my surgery hours. Feel free always to book me in anytime you need my time and attention between 2 and 4, like any day, my diary's open. And that open door policy between 2 and 4 allows you to have a closed door for some of those other hours. And so again, just putting those things in some kind of boundary and some kind of constraint just often allows you to open that stuff up.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, Lawrence?
Yeah, I was about to say, well, it feels like with the client side of things, I just remember the agency days when we were working with clients, I think it's a lot easier when you set out from the beginning with that arrangement. Yeah. I think setting it or changing the way you work when they've had a certain expectation of your availability can be difficult. I think the other thing was just, for me, the story you tell sounds so important. So there's the practical side of how it works, but then there's why you're doing it and what that means in terms of the effectiveness of the work you create for them. So how you can tell the story that you're actually going to be of better service to them by being less available, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just looking at Kim's comment in there as well saying, please, can you say something about managing the workload personally when they're seeing, so yeah, clients and team and all that over there. But like, yeah, I've got what, I don't feel like I can fit into a 7-day week. How can I do it in a 4-day week? So what I'd say about that is, so actually there was a survey a couple of years ago, some research around happiness and which countries in the world had the best work-life balance and the least amount of stress. And as always in these kind of surveys, Denmark came out as the top. You know, the Scandinavians are so smug, aren't they? They get everything right. And they went to Denmark to interview people and said, you know, why does Denmark have the best work-life balance and the least stress? And this guy on the TV news was like, well, it's very simple. If you want to reduce stress, just lower your expectations. And I think that's probably, you know, a really important point to sort of talk to Kim's question there is like, I think we need to really understand that like a productivity ninja is a human and not a superhero, right? Like there's a limit to what we do. There are no special powers. We do have human levels of energy. And, you know, actually the best way to really feed that productivity is to do less, not more. So particularly when you feel under pressure, you know, Carlos, you were talking about sleep before, but just actually taking that step back and kind of, you know, deliberately having some days where you're doing a bit less will give you the stamina to over a long period of time do more, and sort of keep you from burnout. You know, the world always needs what we do for the next 20 or 30 years at like 90-95% capacity, not the next half a year at 110% capacity and then burnout. Right. So it's like all these things are a marathon, not a sprint. So I think that's important. And I think, again, you know, coming back to what I was talking about before with the idea of the weekly checklist, one of the most important things about that for me is that it allows you to go through your projects and your actions and make sure you've got a really nicely defined project every time. And then also really clear what are the next physical things I need to do on each of those items. And like, I think when you do that really regularly, it makes it much easier to start saying no to more things, to start to recognize where the energy and value is, you know, in and amongst these 30 things I want to do, actually these three are where the money is, or these three are where my love is, or these three are where people really need my help right now. And so I think, you know, often we don't spend enough time on that thinking and enough time on that, like, you know, real deep thinking around linking the priorities that we see in our projects to our sort of deeper values, wider purpose, company value, whatever we're trying to create. And so I think the more we do that, the easier it is to say no to some of those things.
A thing that also I think springs up for me a deeper level is giving yourself permission to let people down. My experience of this is always wanting to make sure everyone's happy and you do your best work for everyone, and how that can really stop you from not doing, because you don't want to feel like you're letting people down. So there's, and this I think for me is quite a fundamental thing and quite one of the most challenging things, I believe, is just saying, okay, I'm going to screw up here, or I'm going to miss that email, or I'm not going to be able to deliver on that time frame. And not because I'm lazy or I'm not diligent. It's just I'm going to have to let something go. One plate is just going to have to fall at some point, and then not beating myself up about it. So, and more often than not, it doesn't end up being the disaster I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So fail faster, right? So if there's 50 things, rather than trying to think that you're going to get to 50 things, recognize which are the two or three that you need to drop, or the five or 10 that you need to drop. And get comfortable with that. I think a big part of, if you're going to manage your attention really ruthlessly, and what I mean by that is deliberately being ignorant to certain things, whether that's turning off email, whether it's putting phone blockers on your phone. I use a thing on my phone called Quality Time, which is an app on Android. There's similar ones for iPhone, like Freedom, Off Time. And what those apps will do is block certain parts of your phone. So it blocks, for me, Instagram, Twitter, Google Chrome, all that stuff is blocked for certain times of the day. What that means is I am going to miss some at replies on Twitter, or some messages on LinkedIn, or I'm going to miss a load of stuff where people are like, you know, maybe people really want a response in the next hour. Like, I didn't look at LinkedIn over the last hour before this call, and I put a thing out there saying, hey, I'm doing this crowdcast thing with Happy Startups, like, get involved. If anyone replied saying, oh, where's the link? I didn't see that. So there'll be small things where we need to...
we'll be having words about that, Graham.
I did actually about an hour before I sent the link to someone, but then I turn it off, right? And it's the same with email. And there was actually, this week is a really interesting thing with that, where I've basically kept my inbox at zero all week, but my action folder, the things I still need to get back to people on, has been slowly creeping up as I've been doing this book. And I've deliberately just spent as little time on email this week as I can possibly get away with, because my brain and my attention needs to be on a book. And I don't know, those of you in the chat and on the call who've written books, you'll know that like a book is one of the very few things where you can't really put it all down on paper like a to-do list. Like, you have to sort of carry it in your head in a weird way. And it just means that your head just has no space for anything else. And so I think that's really true of like anything of like real value in the world. You've got to have a deep level of attention to it. You know, Cal Newport uses this phrase, the deep work. And you've got to really screen out a lot of that noise and stuff. And so, you know, the art of letting small bad things happen, I think, is a really important part of productivity. And the art of failing faster is a really important part of it. And I think Tim Ferriss calls it having a low information diet. Mm-hmm. And selective ignorance, you know, I think these are really important phrases as we think about how we manage our attention, because it's our attention that really counts, not our time, right? And it's how we manage our attention that matters.
I like the idea of Make Time book. They talk about infinity pool apps. The idea of these apps are just like, you know, always on, and there's always more data and information to swallow.
There's that. I think the thing is, two things that come to mind is there's the attention. So have that focused attention to do the thing that you're doing at the moment. And then the intention, that these are the important things. And when you're talking about the rocks in that yard, these, and so everything else, even if it is important to someone else, unfortunately, is not part of my intention. And so I being able to then drop those things and not put them in the jar, because they're not within the direction I want to go. And I feel that's another fundamental thing I feel, particularly with the people we work with, is with less intention, you have less attention, because you're not sure what to say no to anymore, because you're so, you want to fit everything in. So difficult one to deal with, but I think a fundamental one.
I think it's almost like a taboo. Like, it's a bit, it's almost, it's put on the same level as hypocrisy, right? Like, hypocrisy is often the worst thing someone in public life can be, or a politician can be, or a manager can be, right? But right up there with hypocrisy is the idea that I said I was going to do this, and now I'm no longer going to do this. And I think if you've got a good reason why the world has changed, my priorities have changed, my intention is not that, I think we need to get much more comfortable with that idea, and do that on a much more regular basis. And in fact, I know you guys from a few years ago when you had your shared space and you just decided we're no longer going to have this co-working space. Like, that was our thing before. We really believed in it, and now we no longer believe in it. Like, I think we need to get much more comfortable with the idea of saying no to things that we previously had said yes to.
Yeah.
Well, it links to a previous conversation about closing well with Tom Nixon and how... when something has no more creative energy.
Yeah, I really love that conversation with Tom.
Okay, I have another question here from Alex. Would you have any advice about how to remain productive when your workload is quieter than usual? During the pandemic, my usual work has definitely slowed down, and I found it difficult to remain productive.
Well, that sounds like great news, doesn't it? Like, means it's probably an easier game to win, so you could look at it on that surface level. But I think, in all seriousness, I think you know, for a lot of people, they've gone through the opposite of that, right? Where it's like, my workload is just now you know, it's trebled, and I've got kids at home to teach and all this kind of stuff, And actually, I think it's just as much of a problem if suddenly it feels like there's just much less work to do. Like, how do I, you know, keep myself in a good momentum and a good rhythm and all that sort of stuff. So there's Parkinson's law, which says work expands to fill the time available. And I would suggest that if your workload's gone down, you need to be really mindful of Parkinson's law. I would say that with that, there are kind of two options. One is you fill more of that, you know, you keep trying to work at the same kind of momentum, and then you have two choices. You either fill more of that space with leisure, sitting in the park, you know, social distancing, seeing friends or whatever. Or you ask yourself a different question, which is like, are there other projects that I can now use to fill that gap? So maybe that's professional development stuff. I know training is still permissible to everybody, even if you're on furlough. And there's so much of it out there at the moment in terms of free resources and stuff. We've got a few of our own, which I'll mention in a few minutes. But, you know, I think just filling that with maybe with more creative or exploration projects, right? Where it's like, actually, I get to experiment with maybe this new product that we might try and create, or at least doing some research around that new product that I was thinking about, or whatever those things are. So, you know, I think there's a sort of sense of either being proactive with how do I temporarily kind of fill that gap with more meaningful, useful stuff that I can put out into the world, or you do the opposite, which is to create more of a constraint and say, I'm still going to work at full pelt. I'm just going to do it for a fewer hours and have a better balance temporarily. And I think both are fine, like, but I'd say both are better than succumbing to Parkinson's law and stretching out the work in a really unsatisfactory way and then beating yourself up about it.
Any thoughts, Lawrence?
I was just to say that Parkinson's law really hits home for me is it when the days when you haven't got much on, it's easy to fill it with crap.
So it's a really good challenge, I think, with any thing that you're working on is set out. So there's the planning fallacy, right, where psychologically people always underestimate how long things are going to take. But if you do that estimation at the beginning, and let's say you're working on a piece of writing or something that you think is going to take 2 hours, like playing around with that and saying, what would this look like if I did it in 30 minutes? And just really messing with your own brain around that. Like often Parkinson's law works in reverse, you know, so if you only give yourself 30 minutes, you will produce something half decent in 30 minutes. So just playing with it like that.
A good example of that is the talk I gave this morning. I was planning on spending yesterday afternoon on it and life got in the way. Ended up spending an hour on it this morning, and I think actually probably got a more effective outcome. But like you said, it just focused the mind of like what, rather than, oh, I could do this or I could do that. It's like, okay, I haven't got time to think, just do. And sometimes that pays dividends. Not always.
I think there's like two different types of work I feel we're talking about. There's this idea of productive work, things that feel like they're going to deliver value immediately. What I hear from Alex's question from my perspective is that I've got less work. I need to work on what I have got better, but for some reason that's not happening. And either that's an energy thing, an emotion thing, fear about, oh, I don't have enough work, and so I'm defocused, I don't have the attention, and so I'm not getting these things done as quickly as I should do. And maybe there's something around, okay, if I knew I could use this time to find more clients or market myself better or something, there was that real strong intention, maybe you could fill that time or structure it better. But then the other aspect of this is the idea of creative work, where you do need to just essentially fill it with, like you said, thinking about it and not necessarily creating straight away, but having that space to wander and to just drift. But it's still intentionally doing that rather than in between washing the dishes or looking after the kids. You like spending a time doing that. So I wonder if there's something around not only thinking about productive work, but how can you introduce some creative space as well?
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that often is the first podcast question I get asked is always, what's your definition of productivity? You guys didn't ask me that, which I'm very grateful for. But usually, you know, over the years, I've sort of had different ones. But the one I always use now is that productivity is ultimately about making space for what matters. And if you think about where all the best ideas you've ever had come from, they probably didn't come when you were sat at your desk doing emails. They probably came in the shower or when you were walking in the woods or, you know, someplace else. So I think, maybe there's something again where, and I certainly feel this a lot, is like feeling guilty for the idea of once I've created that space, actually using it to go for a walk or have some downtime and get inspiration. And like, because this is going to sound really pretentious now, but because
I'm really in Brighton.
I'm in Brighton after all. Because a big part of my work is about creating, writing, you know, books, courses, all this sort of stuff. A couple of times a year, I have to remind myself of that. And I'm not very good at following it through, but I always write. A couple of times a year, I write in my Nosby, my to-do list manager, your job is to go for a walk in the woods. And, you know, seeing it in that way that, like, actually what's going to help me generate ideas and solve problems and recognize the thing that's stuck in my business or whatever those things are, you know, that's going to unhook and reveal itself, like when I go for a walk in the woods and when I'm consciously not putting my attention onto emails and social media and like all that frenetic stuff. And as I say, I'm not particularly great at once I've created that space, actually using it for those really useful things. But I think it's a really good, that's one of those things that I'm always working on is, you know, trying to use that space in the way that leads to the bigger inspirations.
One thing that springs to mind about if you do have that space and you want to fill it, one of the things that I've experienced through the work that we're doing is connecting with others. If you can get a chance to just have a conversation or be part of a group, and just even that talking around ideas or even challenges like this, having a space like this where you think, oh, I'm struggling with this or this is a bit difficult, then we can all get too busy, particularly now in lockdown, in our own little bubbles, trying to make things happen on our own and forgetting that just reaching out, having a conversation between one or two other people, we found that over and over again, how that just shifts the energy and you just see things you didn't see before.
Yeah.
So, and that's productive and that can help. Sure. Cool. We have another couple of questions before we kick off and finish off. We've got Leanne here. She says, clearly most companies will now let their teams have the choice to continue working from home, probably as part of a hybrid mix with the office and third spaces. Are you seeing an uplift in employers wanting to train their teams in productivity as being remote? Being remote means more trust is needed and the focus should be less on hours worked and more on outcomes delivered. Is there a shift to come?
I think the shift's happening. We launched a new workshop a few weeks ago called Leading Remote Teams to sort of respond to that demand that we were seeing. Getting great feedback from people, which to me says that it is scratching an itch. Like people are definitely thinking about that. I think for me, the shift that is maybe more, I think we'll go back very quickly to a sort of hybrid model where I do think there'll be more working from home than there was before the pandemic, but there'll be nowhere near the level of working from home that certainly that there is now. There are a few companies, I think, in quite a forward-thinking way. I saw a charity yesterday saying, hey, we're going to get rid of our London office and just everybody be remote. But I think they'll be, from what I'm seeing, they'll be the exceptions rather than what everyone will do. I think most people will still have big offices and stuff. I think the bigger shift that is more difficult is removing that presenteeism, which for me is always about trust and autonomy. So there's kind of two ways that you manage people, right? One is you sort of keep an eye on them and like just keep walking into the room and just make sure they're still at their desks and make sure that you don't see Facebook on their computer or whatever. And the other way that you manage people is you give them the outcomes that you want to deliver. You coach them, you invest in them, and then you let them get out of the way and let them get the hell on with it, right? And that level of autonomy and trust is uncomfortable for people. So I think we're, I mean, there was a thing I saw a couple of weeks ago where there's a company developing software that will basically track people as they're working at their desks. I think it's the worst, just absolutely the worst. And I think, you know, one of the real hidden, you know, unexpected positive outcomes of this whole pandemic situation is the amount of teams and the amount of employers who are who've let everyone work from home, which was banned before or not allowed in that level before. And it turns out that they've got on with it and done their work. Like, if you trust people, you know, then actually generally people are good, and generally people will be motivated and do good work. And so I think, you know, for me, I think there is still, there's a big shift in a lot of people's minds around that whole kind of, but have they done their hours? You know, all that sort of like monitoring of people and sort of counting of hours, especially when at the other extreme, you've got, you know, people working in Amazon warehouses wearing nappies because they're not allowed to clock the 3 minutes it would take to go to the toilet and stuff. You know, it's that stuff is still serious and real and exists. And yeah, I just think that will be the ultimate test, is if we can kind of really as a society start to trust people to do work in a much more autonomous way. I mean, that's how we've run Think Productive for years. You know, people sort of working in different parts of the country, home offices. We have had a central space, but we've had a lot of people remote. Even when we had a central space, was in the office like, you know, a day a month, if that. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next few months.
Reminds me of years ago, when lastminute.com came out, the travel company online, I think they were the first online travel company, and they used to have a button for the bosses coming, and it would bring up like a spreadsheet or a kind of pie chart to make it look like you're busy.
Yeah.
You can't be booking holidays at work. That's just outrageous.
I think Leanne mentions then, she says it's all about culture in a way.
And leadership.
Well, I wanted to acknowledge, like, you know, when we were running an agency, we wanted to give people as much freedom as possible and autonomy to get their work done. Just wanted to acknowledge it isn't as simple as well, because there's that pressure as a founder, as a leader. You've got revenue to generate. You've got this cash flow you're trying to manage. And so there's this real tension where you think, are they doing the work they need to do? Because we need to get that money in. Because if we don't get that money in... So it really, that's why when Leanne said it's about culture, it really is about the ethos you're creating. And as a founder, as a leader, where your attention is and where that fear is. And so, yeah, I totally feel, I love the idea of giving people much more autonomy and freedom to do that. But there's the acknowledging also that the pressures of work, I can understand why that can be difficult for some people. So,
you know, one of the things we say on that Leading Remote Teams workshop is that basically culture comes from physical spaces, but it also comes from leadership. And so how you set the culture in terms of the team dynamic, the culture in terms of how often you meet, how you meet, you know, what numbers you're, you know, particularly keeping an eye on and trying to grip, you know, all those kind of really key elements of running a team. You can do that without physical space, but they do need to be there, right? And also, like, digital spaces can be really useful for setting culture. You know, Think Productive uses Slack, and just those little, you know, celebratory emojis and smiley faces and hearts and stuff, like, can actually really add a very rich layer of sort of human interaction to culture, even when people are not even seeing each other face to face.
I'm gonna go to questions and answers box zero and have the last question to answer here. It's from Laura, and she asks, how can you build up or boost your attention span? I feel like mine's declined a great deal over lockdown because I've been split screening too much. So maybe some quick tips on that before we go.
Yeah, so there's two things about that. One is the natural energy that you have in the brain. So we talked before about food, exercise, fresh air, sleep, trying not to have alcohol the night before, that sort of stuff. You'll just generally have more energy. I'm a big fan. I love a evening beer, so I'm a big fan of the BrewDog Nanny State beer and stuff like that. So I can have my beer ritual, but it's like 0%. So I still sleep, because you sleep much worse if you have alcohol. That said, you know, there are days where the beer is okay. But so one is about just the general energy that you allow your brain to be creating via food and exercise and everything else. On the other side of it, it's then what do you put that attention to and what do you screen out of that? And so I think things like phone blocker apps, the idea of monotasking rather than multitasking. So taking all the bits of paper that relate to something else off your desk, closing all the windows that you're not working on, you know, really a lot of you, if you're feeling like you can't focus, look at how many 50 things you have surrounding you that are not related to the thing you're working on. Get rid of 49 of them. You might find that you can focus a lot more, right? So often this is environmental, and it's about the psyche of how we approach attention management rather than necessarily about, oh, my brain just isn't working. Like, usually there's stuff that you can do that will really help.
On top of that, for me, I found really, really useful just being just time boxing. I know there's the Pomodoro technique, but one of the things that always gets me with my attention is like, I've got to do this thing and do that thing. And if I spend too much time on this thing, I won't get those other things done. So if I could say, all right, I'm going to do just this for 25 minutes, and I know that's all I'm going to do, and I will have time for other stuff. Inevitably, what happens at the end of 25 minutes, I want to do some more, and I get into that zone. But it's that initial bit of, again, not enough intention, or there's too many other things I'm thinking about that stops me narrowing down the focus. So I found that really useful.
All about momentum, right? Like, if you just create momentum, then momentum feeds itself. Like, I think in terms of like momentum and motivation, I feel like with certainly with my work, I'm either on a spiral up or I'm on a spiral down. Like, there's no standing still. So if you can push that momentum and just, you know, all those things like tricking yourself by saying, I'm just going to do the first 20 minutes of this really horrible thing.
Yeah,
that involves Excel spreadsheets or whatever. And it's like you open Excel and you start, and there's such a big setup cost in terms of the energy of the brain, in terms of just switching into a different thing. And then suddenly I'm in Excel and it just suddenly feels way easier than it did 10 minutes ago. And it's like, yeah, give me all the receipts. I'll do all of it, you know? So yeah, momentum is a really important thing.
I'm fascinated by that. There's loads of great stuff in the Deep Work book about like creating the environment for you to succeed, isn't there? About getting the right environment. I think they even talked about J.K. Rowling booking the Gleneagles suite to finish her book because she needed somewhere away from a traditional environment. So yeah, we're all bad at managing our own time and willpower, I think.
And it's the idea that if you've paid for the Gleneagles suite, then you better make it, exactly. Worth your while, right?
Like, yeah.
Cost you that much money. Exactly. There's a thing I saw years ago, which was you set yourself a task and then you have to report back whether you completed it or not. And if you didn't complete it, you've already given your credit card details and it donates money to
a remember that, yeah.
That you really hate. So it's like, I didn't do this thing, and now the consequence is Donald Trump's election campaign has received a new donation.
Well, actually, I saw one guy years ago who, I think he scheduled a tweet to go out every morning at a certain time. So if he didn't get up in time to remove it, he's a lazy so-and-so.
That's brilliant.
Oh, there you go. Everything you need to have focus and productivity. So we come to an end. Thank you very much, Graham.
Cheers,
Graham. For sharing your time and your knowledge, and it's always good to chat. Before we leave, a quick shameless promotion bit of the show. If people want to find out more about your stuff, or if you have anything that you'd like to direct people to, please tell us, Graham.
Yeah, so my company is called Think Productive. So we do workshops for some of the leading and most interesting companies in the world on productivity, getting inboxes to zero, all that sort of stuff. We do have a set of resources, particularly around working from home. So if you just go to thinkproductive.com/WFH for working from home, just loads of free resources you can download. There's also, I think, the recording of one of our first webinars on working from home specifically. So thinkproductive.com/WFH. I also do a podcast called Beyond Busy, So go and subscribe to that. There's you can actually Google the previous episode with Lawrence and Carlos.
We were there.
And I've also just recently started a weekly mailing list. So if you just go to grahamalcott.com, I've launched this thing called Rev Up for the Week. The idea is just every Sunday night, some positive and interesting thoughts into your inbox for the week ahead. So yeah, there's a form on the homepage of the website at grahamalcott.com if you want to sign up for that.
Awesome. Thank you very much. For those of you who'd love to connect with each other and get that energy and sense of not feeling alone, next week we have our regular monthly Ideas Cafe. We used to do these live in Brighton, but now due to what's happening, we are doing them online. And so there's a Zoom call that we host, and it's a great place to meet, network, connect with people, just feel, learn from about new things, but ultimately be able to share your knowledge and share a space with other people, and all from the comfort of your laptop. It starts at 8:45 a.m. UK time, and we usually finish around about 10:30. If you have a question or a challenge, it's also a great place to get some really powerful free advice. So I hope to see you there. That's next Thursday at 8:45. And the other thing I wanted to share is that we just finished our 2020 vision program. Leanne, who's on the call, was part of that. It was an amazing experience, particularly given the challenges we had with the pandemic. But if you're a solopreneur or a solo founder who wants to magnify the impact of their work and wants to have the support of other people on that journey, we're going to offer a space for you to do that journey in over 6 months with myself, Lawrence, and our good friend Lana. And we're going to use our experience of hosting spaces and also using technology to build community and to also help essentially get more clarity about the work that you want to do. Very much about what Graham was talking about today, what is that clear intention for what you want to do. So if that's of interest, we'll put a quick link into the chat as well. Is there anything else, Lawrence, that you'd like to share?
Just to say we didn't pay Leanne to post that.
I mean, life-changing, that's a pretty good...
it's been amazing. It's been, I wouldn't say I have my doubts about doing a solely online program because we launched it before COVID. But yeah, it's been amazing. 20 amazing people from all around the world. Yeah, it's been incredible. So yeah, looking forward to doing it again later in the year. And we wouldn't have been able to do it if summer camp wasn't cancelled. So in some ways, yeah. Every cloud has a silver lining.
Exactly. Space. Oh, was it Parkinson's law?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, everyone. Cheers, Graham.
Thanks.
And, you take care. Have a great rest of the day and have a lovely, spacious and productive weekend.
And the sea mist is still there if anyone's interested. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Entrepreneur podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Also, if you'd like to learn more about being a happy entrepreneur and want to connect with more people like you, then go to our website, thehappystartupschool.com, and subscribe to our newsletter. Amongst many other things about business and life, we'll help you answer the following questions. How can I serve others by being myself? And how can I discover who I really am by serving others?